McComas? Deborah McComas?
Oh, for you? Oh, okay.
Thanks a lot. Good morning. This past Shabbos, we read Parshas Re'eh. So we read one of the central makoros for the obligation of tzedakah, one of the central places in the Torah where we find this obligation laid out. And in addition, we read a passage, Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Teleichu. We are told to walk in God's path. And this is a theme which appears throughout Sefer Dvarim. At least 8 times in Sefer Dvarim we find this directive that we're told to follow God's path. And the Talmud tells us, in Maseches Sota, which was Daf Yomi recently, that this idea of following God's path seems like a very daunting obligation. How exactly do you follow God? God is a transcendent fire, the Talmud says. It's Eish Ochla. How do you walk in His path? So the Talmud tells us, what does that mean to walk in His path? It means to imitate His attributes. That just like God is kind and merciful, so too, we are meant to be kind and merciful and generous to others and help out people in need and visit the sick and comfort mourners, etc., etc. So in this parsha, we have both the central obligation of tzedakah, which I believe is on the sheet. If you see the first source, all the psukim detailing the obligation of tzedakah. And we have one of the many phrases that we find, particularly in Sefer Dvarim, directing us towards a life of chesed. So these two values of tzedakah and chesed, kind of hard to argue with. No one's going to oppose the concepts of tzedakah and chesed. But in concept, they're a lot easier to talk about than in practice. And in practice, we have busy lives, we have difficult schedules, we have expenses, we have a lot of things to balance and to juggle. And trying to figure out how to apply exactly our limited budget of time and of money towards the practice of chesed and the practice of tzedakah is a lot harder than it sounds. And the truth is, on the one hand, it's an area where we have a lot of discretion. We have a lot of wiggle room to come up with our own preferences and our own decisions. And at the same time, the halacha has a strong say as well. There is a section in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tzedakah. Shulchan Aruch doesn't just leave it to us to figure out on our own. But at the same time, there is always going to be, as the post can point out at the end of the day, a strong element of discretion. And we try to find the balance between the two. We try to make our decisions in a way that's informed by the halachic values. And these play out in at least 3 different arenas. And I'd like to try to take a look at all 3 at once. Try to see some of the principles, how they affect the 3 arenas. Because on the one hand, there is the giving out of tzedakah, the limited resource of money, of funds, how that's affected by these halachic values. That's one arena. The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer on Chesed, Avas Chesed, assumes as given that these same rules, at least for the most part, apply to the practice of Chesed, because our time is also limited, our time also requires budgeting. So the same rules, to the extent that they're relevant to tzedakah, would apply to chesed as well. And then within tzedakah, there's another realm, and that's the realm where you are giving out other people's money. Somebody who's an administrator of a fund, somebody who's involved in the distribution of tzedakah, which is really a combination of the two realms. A person who's going to be what we call a gabbai tzedakah, who's going to be an official or an appointee in charge of giving out tzedakah, is really combining the realm of tzedakah with their own active time, which is the realm of chesed. So put those two together, that's somebody involved in giving out tzedakah. So there you find sometimes the rules are a little bit different. Sometimes they're the same, and sometimes they're different. So we'd like to try to look at some of these principles, some of these rules, and see how they apply in these 3 realms: giving out your own money, giving out your own time, and using your time to give out the money of others, how those 3 realms may be affected by these different principles that we find in the Sifrei Halacha. In the interest of fulfilling the requirement that the Shulchan Aruch writes that those who are involved in tzedakah and the distribution of tzedakah have to have various qualities. In addition to being trustworthy and honest and people who you can rely on, they have to be nevonim v'chachamim. They have to be people who are wise, people who have an insight, who can understand who they're dealing with, what are the needs of people who they're dealing with. That takes a certain inborn trait that has to be trained. And in addition, they have to be chachamim, they have to be wise, they have to be acquainted with the principles in halacha that inform these decisions. So we can't do so much about bino in one session, but we can try to do a little bit about chachma, try to expose ourselves a little bit to some of these principles. The Vilna Gaon is quoted as having commented, if you look at the psukim that talk about staka again in this first source, so we find that this first pasuk tells us in the end of the pasuk, lo sa'ame says levavcha, that we shouldn't harden our heart, velo sikbo says yadcha, you shouldn't close your hands, and we'll talk about those prohibitions in a few minutes, but the Vilna Gaon in a homiletic vein commented that this idea, you shouldn't close your hand, you shouldn't make a fist, the Vilna Gaon noted that when you close your hand, so it looks like all your fingers are the same size. And then when you open them up, you realize it's not true. You realize all the fingers are different sizes. And he says, this is a basic reality when it comes to the realm of tzedakah. If you have a closed book, so you may feel that, okay, it's like a computer, you can enter in certain principles, you can enter in certain rules, and you'll be able to calculate who should come first, who should come second, what should come first, what should come next. And real life is much more complicated. Real life, there are so many variables, and there's so many differences, and there's so many nuances that we can't really apply it like a computer. There's always more to figure out. So we're always going to have some room for our own decisions, while at the same time, being exposed to these basic principles does a lot to direct the character of these decisions. Let's try to take a look a little bit at some of these ideas that we find in the halachic literature. So first of all, as a general question, focusing on, let's say, tzedakah, so the question could come up, what's the best approach to take? If you go to an investment counselor, he'll tell you the same type of question. So should I diversify? Should I try to spread the wealth to as many different people, as many different places as possible? Or should I perhaps focus? Should I concentrate in one place? If I give all of my money, if I direct all of my efforts into one place, I'll have a bigger impact. I'll make a bigger difference on the world. So what's the better approach? What's the better approach for my investments? What's the better approach for my spiritual investments? I'm going to be involved in tzedakah. I have a limited amount of money. So how should I do it? Should I direct it to as many people, as many causes as possible? Or should I try to have a bigger impact with a little more focus? And this, as with everything else, is somewhat of a machlokas, but perhaps the most prominent source on this question is a statement of the Rambam. The Rambam, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, we have it reproduced here, it's source 3, you can take a look. The Rambam tells us that, if you look at the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that he's commenting on, the Mishnah has a little bit of a vague statement, that's source number 2. The last four words of the Mishnah tell us that hakol lufi rov hamaaseh, that everything in this world is measured, is decided upon by the rov of the action. So what does that word mean, the rov of the action? And the Rambam tells us that what it means is we don't look at magnitude, we don't look at something being big, which you might call the godel of the action, but the word rov has a connotation of multiplicity. We look at things happening many times rather than being big. So we look more at quantity than we look at a single impact. And in that context, the Rambam says that, for example, so if you have somebody who has a certain amount of money, this is towards the end, the last word on the line is mashal in this third source. So the Rambam says, let's say mashal zasha adam yitain lemisha ro yalef dinner, b'pam achas u'leish achad. Let's say somebody has 1,000 dinar, 1,000 coins, and he could give it in one shot to one person. So that's not going to have as much of an impact on him. This one act of significant generosity is not going to accomplish that much in this world. It's not going to have as much an effect on him, and it's not going to have as much of an impact. So it's not going to have as much an impact as somebody who's going to do it 1,000 times. V'yitein kol dinner mehem al tzad ha-nedivas, and he'll give each one with a sense of generosity. Because the fisha zeh yichapel yado maisa nedivas elef pamim. Because through that, he will multiply the impact of this generosity 1,000 times. So first of all, we see two things here. That first of all, the Rambam is preferring actions happening many times over one big flashy action. And that, taken in the abstract, could be understood two ways. Right? Even let's say we acknowledge the Rambam's priority here, and we believe that that's right. And there were some who disagreed. The Maharal took a different view, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden took a different view. But let's say we take this position that we prefer many different gifts. So we could look at this two ways. And the Rambam's language really suggests one way, as we'll discuss in a minute. But on the one hand, we could say that it's better for the world. The world is better off if the wealth is spread out more evenly, that if the tzedakah that's available is given to as many people as possible, that's more beneficial to the world population than if a few lucky people get large gifts. Or, we could say, a different approach, which is really the way the Rambam's language pushes us, that it's not really about impacting more people, but it has to do with the impact it has on you. That every time you give tzedakah, so that increases your own generosity, that has an effect on your soul, and therefore it's better for you to give tzedakah 1,000 times of a dollar each than for you to give one gift $1,000, which is going to have an impact on you once. Better for you to overcome your instinct against giving tzedakah 1,000 times, that'll have a much greater impact on you. So these two avenues reflect a dual theme that we find throughout Chesed and throughout tzedakah, that there really are two different things we're trying to accomplish. But on the one hand, the Torah wants us to help people, and that's a clear value of tzedakah and Chesed. And at the same time, we are also supposed to have an effect on ourselves. We're also trying to create a certain personality while we engage in these acts. And we find, in terms of Chesed, that that's perhaps why we see two different sources when we talk about Chesed. There are two different types of sources. That on the one hand, we have an obligation of the Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, the well-known Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, one of the candidates in the Medrash for the most important Pasuk in the Torah. And that is understood as an obligation to help people. We want to make sure people's needs are addressed. And at the same time, we have the Pasuk in this week's Parsha that we mentioned before, the idea of imitating God. We call it Matati Odei, the idea of Ahalachta Bedracha. And that's more about the personality that we create, that we try to, for ourselves, we try to create a personality that is generous and kind, and we try to do things that bring us along that path. So in every act of tzedakah or chesed, we're looking at both goals, we're looking at whatever goal is relevant, hopefully both goals, we're trying to help, and we're trying to create personalities that are compassionate and generous and kind. So when I say, or when the Rambam says, that the world is better off, or that it's a better approach rather, to diversify your tzedakah, there are two goals here. On the one hand, you could help more people, so from the perspective of helping the world, maybe it's more efficient to do it that way. And on the other hand, as far as the personality it creates, more acts of tzedakah has a greater impact on the giver. So from the Rambam's language, it sounds more like the second, more like he's interested on the effect on the giver, that each time you have to give it, each time you push yourself to be generous, you're going to have a greater impact on yourself. But there are others who took explicitly the other half of the equation. For example, the Bach, it's not on the sources, the Bach in Hilchos Purim. In the laws of Purim, so we have an obligation of tzedakah, of matanos levyonim is part of the day, is one of these essential elements of Purim, to give tzedakah to the poor. And the Bach writes that to him it's very obvious, he writes that it's quite self-evident as far as he's concerned, that somebody who could give a large gift to one person or a smaller gift to many people, so to him it's very obvious, better you should give smaller gifts to many people. And the reason he says is because in doing so, you will have sustained many, many more people. So it was clear from his emphasis that we're looking at the impact on the world, that the fact that you're going to be able to help more people, that's what interests us, and that's what directs us to the same practical conclusion as the Rambam, but maybe with this different emphasis. So we find the same idea in the Rambam and the Bach, but coming from different directions. The Rambam telling us it has a bigger impact on you, and the Bach telling us it has a better impact on the world, and for that reason, better we should diversify. So does it matter which reason you take? If you come to the same conclusion, does it make a difference? So on the one hand, it may not. In some cases, it may. As many, many Achronim point out, many of the Doli Apolskim point out, so what if it's not your money? What if you are an administrator of a fund? What if you have to give out money that was collected from others, our third arena of where these aspects come in? So then you don't really have the right to make decisions based on what's going to have a better impact on you. then you can't really use the Rambam's factor of saying, well, I will spiritually gain more by giving it out this way. If you're administrating the funds of others, so then your responsibility is really to society. Your responsibility is really to do this in a way that's going to have the biggest impact on the world. And therefore, the Bach's reasoning is going to resonate more, while the Rambam's factor is not going to play as much of a role. In general, as is often the case, so the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. And that's, as many of the later poskim point out, that on the one hand we find this advantage to diversifying, as so many follow the Rambam and the Bach. On the other hand, if you're going to diversify so much that you're going to really be giving very small gifts, not going to have any impact at all, it's not going to be felt to any degree, so then that's too diluted. So we want to try to, on the one hand, spread it out, at the same time, do it in such a way that will have at least a little bit of an impact and every place where this money is given. And to that extent, so the Gemara does also, seemingly recognizing the Bach's factor, the Gemara which we have here in Maseches Erevin, tells us in terms of the Matnas Kahuna, the gifts that you're supposed to give to a Kohen. So the Gemara says here in Erevin, source number 4, that Kolanosa and Matanosa of the Kohen Echad, Mevi Ra'av Lo'olam. That whoever gives all of his gifts to one Kohen, who doesn't try to diversify a little bit, so that has a bad impact on the world. That creates famine, the Gemara says. And apparently you have such a disproportionate situation where some people are getting everything and other people are getting nothing, so that's not healthy for the world. Seems to again focus on this Bach perspective of the same idea that the Rambam is telling us. And this din is brought in Shulchan Aruch, if you look at source number 5. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Lo Yiten Adam Kol Tzid Kosov La'ani Echad Bilvad. A person shouldn't give all of his tzedakah to one person. And here we find also that this is something that also depends a little bit on the circumstances. The Marsham is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called Das Torah. The Marsham suggests that this is true over a lifetime. That a person gives all of his tzedakah over a lifetime to one person, so then that tends to have a very lopsided effect. But let's say you have give out all your tzedakah on a monthly basis, so you have a January fund and a February fund and a March fund, and you decide that February my project is going to be focused over here and in March my project is going to be focused over here, so here it's generally agreed that that's a reasonable plan, that makes sense. It's talking in the larger scale, you give all of your money in one direction, so then that tends to create a lopsided effect on the world. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has also comments on the Shulchan Aruch, where he also suggests that here again, that you find the difference between your private money and money that you're giving out for others, that if you're giving out money that you've collected from others, so you have to also worry that you're going to be able to convince people they should keep giving to the fund. And if they have a perception that you always direct it all to one person, you always direct it to one source, so they're not going to feel like their money is being so efficiently spent, so they're not going to want to give tzedakah to the fund. So that's also a priority, that's also a consideration that somebody who's directing or administering a public fund has to have in mind. And that's also an area where, again, we find maybe a little bit of a difference between a private fund and a public fund. So that's one issue, one broad issue that we take into mind. We look into this question of how do we allocate tzedakah, how do we allocate tzedakah, whether it's ours or whether it's others. So we have this question of diversification or of concentration and really all of the permutations within. So another of the major considerations that we think about when we talk about tzedakah, and which also comes right out of the psukim that we read yesterday morning. So we see the second pasuk in the first source, pasuk ches, what we're told to do if we find somebody who's needy, kifa soach tiftaches yod chalo. You shouldn't close your hand like it says in the previous pasuk, but you should open your hand. That's the positive end. And the pasuk ends off, dei machsoro asher yechzar lo. That we should help out this person by giving him that which he is lacking, de machsoro. And that de machsoro is a very fascinating concept which opens up a whole world. The Talmud tells us that it's really understood very expansively. That it's understood that even if you have somebody who is used to great luxury and has fallen from that luxury, is no longer in a situation where they can afford it, so not only are we obligated to keep them alive, not only do we have to give them the basic necessities of life, but we have to also bring them back to where they were. which is a little bit hard to understand from a prioritization level, because the Gemara gives us some very extreme examples of people who were used to great luxury, the extent to which we try to recreate their luxury. Even though the Gemara says that there are limits, he says you're not obligated to enrich a person. The same sentence the Gemara says, we give them what they're lacking, but you don't have to make them wealthier than they were. Okay, but perhaps they were wealthy to start off with, so that's a tremendous demand. And it's clear from these sources, first of all, that we're not talking on a permanent level, but we're talking about softening the blow, that there is an emotional reality that's being addressed here, that really a lot of the chiddush of Dei Machzoro is about emotional realities. It's going beyond the physical needs of the individual, but recognizing the emotional pain that comes from a sudden downfall from wealth into a more needy situation, however we chart the fall, and therefore to address that emotional reality, at least to cushion the blow, is what the Torah is demanding here. And this is why some pointed out that the Gemara seems to go out of its way to give an unusual example. The Gemara talks about having servants run in front of you, having a very unusual example of great luxury. So some of the later commentaries noted that this is to make the point that sometimes there are needs that seem to us to be what we might call a mishugas, seems to be a little bit crazy, who needs this? And it's to highlight the point that in the emotional realm, even if we don't always understand it, it doesn't seem to make sense to us, we're trying to comfort the person from their emotional blow, and that's what we're addressing here.
I'm not sorry to interrupt. The security guard just told me that somebody left a car running in the parking lot, a gray Nissan, a New Jersey plate, WAT16L. So if that's your car, it's running in the lot. Thanks.
Okay. So in any event, however we understand why it is, the imperative of Dei Machzoro can be an overwhelming imperative. And it doesn't seem like that's something that any one of us can really fulfill. It can exist as a goal, it can exist as an aspiration, but any one of us is going to find it very daunting to make up the Dei Machzoro of even one ani, even one person, to try to make up everything they're lacking is really beyond us. And that's especially... And when taken together with another Gemara in Ksubis, right, the Dei Machzoro Gemara, by the way, is this source 7, where we see the Gemara tells us, Ata Metzuvelo Parnasov, Iata Metzuvelo Vlashra, you have to support him without necessarily making him rich. And the Gemara goes on to say, Afilu Sus Lurcha Vala, even to give him a horse to ride, and an Eved Loris Lefanov, and a servant to run in front of him. So on the one hand, we have that source. But on the other hand, we have source number 8, which is a few blocks earlier in Ksubis, about 2.5 weeks in Dafyomi measurement. So source 8 tells us a rule when it comes to tzedakah. The first line over there, ha-mevazveis, which is a little bit of an unusual word. Mevazveis sounds like it means you're squandering your money, but it's really a reference to tzedakah. Ha-mevazveis, al yevazveis yosur michomesh. That when a person is giving tzedakah, so we know that we have an ideal that people should try to give a tenth, we call ma'aser ksafim. It's derived from the statement of Yaakov, who says, Aser Asrenu, I'll give a tenth of everything to God, whether it's derived directly or indirectly as a custom is a big discussion. It's not necessarily for now. But what's more explicitly stated, because the idea of Ma'aser Ksafim is more generally understood, it's not explicitly stated as a halacha in the Gemara. What's more explicitly stated as this Gemara is the upper limit. The Gemara says that there's a maximum, that even though we would recommend 10% minimum, we have a maximum of 20%. 20% is the upper limit, because if you're going to give more than 20%, so then we're going to be afraid that it's going to cut into your own ability to survive, your own ability to function, and then you yourself are going to need to ask for tzedakah. So that's not going to help the world if the people giving tzedakah are themselves going to have to be taking for tzedakah. So at the same time as we say there's a recommended minimum, there's also a recommended maximum. There's an extensive discussion that whether or not this really applies in all cases. There are certain circumstances where the maximum is not going to apply. You could also have somebody who's extremely wealthy who could give away 90% of their money and they'll still be far wealthier than everybody else. So it's clear the post can write that doesn't apply to them. Plus the average person, so we have a 20% maximum. So if you have a 20% maximum, that already is not going to allow you to do Dei Machzoro for anybody. You're not going to be able to support somebody, everything that they're lacking, on a 20% budget. So, first of all, the Ramah suggests that Dei Machzoro is not really an obligation on the individual. It's an obligation on the community. That's as the Ramah writes, and that's here also in the source number 9, that the Ramah here says, "Aval ein hayachid mechuyav liten la'ani day ma'achsaro," that it's not an obligation on the individual, but rather, it says right before that, on the rabbin, that this is the community's obligation to be aware of people who are needy within the community, and to take it upon themselves collectively to try to make up whatever is missing. Here the Ramah also adds another aspect of this obligation, which is a large part of what rabbis are very often involved with when it comes to the case of tzedakah, that since it's usually not possible for any individual to really fulfill Dei Machzoro, so what can they do? So the Ramah goes on to say, Ela modio tzaro l'rabim. You should tell the world, tell people that this person needs money, this person needs tzedakah. That's why very often we see that rabbanim, when they're confronted with situations, sometimes they're able to help and sometimes they're not. But even if they can't help, so they're able to tell other people, they're able to write letters, they're able to inform the community as a whole that this person needs some assistance. And here the Ramah tells us that that's also part of the obligation of Dei Machzoro. So here we have this ideal of trying to help people on this level, and that's on the books as a priority. And in reality, the individual is not really in a position to do so much about that, but the community as a whole at least can address it, at least can have it on their list of priorities. And the leadership can try to communicate to others, can try to make sure that other people who might be in a position to add more can also help. Now, it's also clear from the sources that this really addresses the community as a whole and the needy within the community. And it's distinct from an ani who himself is diversifying. The giver diversifies, but the recipients also diversify. If somebody goes from town to town, collecting in every town, it's not that he lives in that town and the people have to make sure he's okay, but that he's traveling and going from place to place. So Shulchan Aruch says that's really also separate from Dei Machzoro. That's not really on that list. And you're supposed to give a little bit, but you don't have the same type of responsibility as you do towards the people who are actually a part of that community. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a small gift. Some discussion on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, what exactly that means, a small gift, enough for one meal, enough for two meals. You express generosity towards this person while recognizing that the real priority is towards that community and the inhabitants of that community, which is something we'll talk a little bit more about, God willing, in a few minutes. So one of the spiritually scarier aspects of tzedakah, so at the same time as we're talking about this obligation, and talking about how to best maximize our fulfillment of this obligation, so we find something scary that before we even talk about the mitzvah, if we look at the pasuk again in source 1, the first pasuk, so we found, as we mentioned before, when we talked about the Vilna Gaon, that we have not only an obligation, but we have two prohibitions. The Torah says, lo sa'ametzes levavcha v'lo sikpotzes yadcha, that we shouldn't harden our heart, and we shouldn't close our fist. So what exactly that means, it sounds like if you're approached for tzedakah, somebody asks you for help, so you're prohibited from saying no. So what do you do with that? That's very challenging, because it's one thing to try to figure out how you're going to fulfill an obligation, but if we're really at risk of violating a prohibition, and not only one prohibition, but two prohibitions, every time we say no, so then that's from a spiritual point of view, a very tricky thing. So how do you manage that? How do we deal with not violating prohibitions while still at the same time reserving our right to make our own decisions and to figure out how best to maximize our tzedakah funds? This means to suggest that whoever gets to us first, whoever comes to us with a hand stretched out at the earliest opportunity, they're going to win because I'm prohibited from saying no. Happens to be, it's a machlokas rishonim, perhaps between the Rambam and the Rashba and others. Does this prohibition, these two prohibitions, apply only when you know about the poor people, or they have to actually ask you? So there are some Rishonim who are going to say, if you know about them and they don't ask you, you still have a prohibition. So that certainly puts a very high burden. But even if you take the relatively lenient view, that they have to actually ask you, so there are enough people who ask us. All of us get enough mail, we have enough people who approach us, that if you're going to tell me that I can't say no to anybody, I'll be in violation of two prohibitions. So that's a very tricky thing. So there's extensive discussion as to what exactly is the realm of these prohibitions, what exactly is the range of these prohibitions. That first of all, even though we generally assume that a prohibition carries a little more severity than a positive mitzvah, so here you find many of the commentaries explaining that these prohibitions are not your normal types of prohibitions. They're not prohibitions that exist in the abstract when the Torah says, don't do this, don't do that. But this is a type of prohibition that comes to strengthen a positive mitzvah. Sometimes you have a format where the Torah says, do this, and don't not do this. So that's clearly what's going on here, that we have really essentially a positive mitzvah of tzedakah, and the Torah is telling us, don't fail to do tzedakah. So that helps us in one step, because it tells us that it only applies when we have the obligation of tzedakah. So we first have to figure out when there's an obligation of tzedakah, and then if we fail to fulfill that obligation, then we perhaps risk these prohibitions. So there's an extensive discussion as to when exactly we have this obligation. Some suggest that it only applies when de machsoro is in effect, and as we saw, that itself has its own limitations. Others suggest that it's subject to all the other rules, that we have to first of all know that we're giving to people who deserve it. That's also part of the equation. The Gemara has a fascinating statement that we should be grateful to the dishonest people in the world. The Gemara says, Bo nachzik tov l'ramayim, we should be thankful that there are some people who are dishonest, because if it were not for the dishonest people, we'd be sinning every day. Because it means that since we know that people who ask us for tzedakah, sometimes they're legit and sometimes they're not, so that's part of what we factor into our decision. If everybody was legit, we'd have a harder time saying no to anybody. We'd really be in trouble. Because we know that some people are not so honest, so therefore that's part of our decision, and that's a legitimate factor to be calculating. That saves us from one level of transgression. So that's how some of the poskim write, that we have this idea that we have to know that we're giving to people who deserve it, and that's also a legitimate calculation. And in addition, so we have our limits. We have our 20%, and if we're past 20%, so then we don't have the obligation. But even while we're giving the 20%, so we also have this prioritization rule, and maybe I'm going to say that I want to hold on to my tzedakah till tomorrow because I have somebody else who I have higher on the list, and that's also, as the post can write, also a legitimate calculation to have in mind. And really addressing all of these together, so some of the Achronim, based on the way some of the Rishonim calculate, the way some of the Rishonim interpret these prohibitions, explain that, look at the language. What does the language say? I shouldn't harden my heart, and I shouldn't close my fist. So it doesn't mean simply any time I don't give tzedakah. But if I don't give tzedakah because I've hardened my heart and I've closed my fist, if I've decided I just don't care about suffering in the world, I don't care that people need, so then if I choose not to give tzedakah for that reason, then I'm in violation of a Torah prohibition. But if I have what the halacha recognizes as legitimate calculations, I'm not sure if this is the best source, I'm not sure if this is a legitimate source at all, I have other priorities, I've already maxed out my tzedakah budget based on what the halacha recommends, all of those are legitimate calculations. If that's the reason, so then, as many understand, that wouldn't be a violation at all of these prohibitions of los sikbots and los amates, and it really goes to the language, which again tells us our dual focus, that on the one hand we try to help as many people as possible, that's what tzedakah is directing us to do, while at the same time we're trying to create a charitable personality. So we don't want to say no, we don't want to be in a position where we don't care, we've said we've hardened our hearts and we've closed our fists. But if it's not that type of a refusal, it's a refusal really in the interest of maximizing our tzedakah, maximizing our ability to help people, so then that doesn't really touch upon these prohibitions at all. So just to also look a little bit, sorry? Yeah, it's a good question. To some extent, the question, if your taxes are going to tzedakah, so is that something that you can calculate? So the question could come from two angles, and it's a question that Post can deal with. I'm going to stay away from it a little bit because I want to focus today more on some of the principles rather than some of the detailed applications. But just to clarify, you could really be asking the question from two directions. Is that not audible? That on the one hand, the question of as far as percentage of your funds as a whole that are going towards charitable goals. And on the other hand, if you're not coming from that direction of figuring out 10% or 20% or somewhere in the middle, but you're saying as far as where the money is going to, that maybe there are certain causes that are being supported by my taxes, and therefore I would choose to direct my more discretionary tzedakah elsewhere, I think that's even more of a legitimate perspective to be addressing. So you find Poskim talking about both halves of that equation. I'm going to stay away from final conclusions on that point, both because we have limited time and because in the interest of the way we started, I want to look more at some of the principles rather than some of the final details. But the central principle that we often hear about, that we'll get to now for a few minutes, is also the question of how do we decide which individuals, among all the different individuals that we could be giving to, how do we decide which individuals should get first priority? So first of all, the first thing that we find in Shulchan Aruch is that family comes first, that relatives have the highest priority, and it's a very detailed list, but essentially it goes first from the closest relatives until one degree less close. We start from, we make a list of all the relatives that we have, and there are various factors that make some relatives closer than others. We start from the closest relative, and that's how we get the top of our list. And this idea has many different ramifications and many different applications, and it's true both in the realm of tzedaka, and it's also true in the realm of chesed. And maybe in both realms we sometimes forget that there are those who are closer to us who are needy of both our money and our time. And it's often easy to overlook, but the poskim don't overlook it. If we read both as far as the Shulchan Aruch and we read some of the later sources, they're very emphatic that we have an obligation towards our relatives first. It's from our basic obligation of support and from our perspective of chesed as well. We have a value, the pasuk in Yeshaya tells us, mibsarcha al tisalem, that we're not supposed to, we're not permitted to hide from our flesh, from our relatives. We have to maintain a closeness to those who are related to us, and that's an independent value which is also factored into the aspect of chesed. And that's often easy to misunderstand because we perceive it more as chesed when we're dealing with people who are less related to us. People who aren't so connected, we feel like we have obligations to our family, that's what everybody does. And then to think about others outside of our family, that's real chesed. And really we often find in the halachic literature that it's really the opposite. That chesed, it's all chesed, whoever we're dealing with, if we're dealing with our spouse, if we're dealing with our children, if we're dealing with whoever, that's all within the realm of chesed. And the obligation is strongest when it's those who are closest to us. And the Medrash has an interesting comment that when Avraham Avinu buried his wife Sarah in the beginning of Parshas Chayisara, so that was an act of chesed. The Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared then that Avram had really attained a personality that was like God. A lot of the commentaries point out, it's very hard to believe that here Avram has a whole life of chesed, everything he does is chesed. So when do we really give him credit? When he arranges a funeral for his wife. So who's not going to do that? That's the kind of thing that every relative would do. That's the most obvious act of chesed. So it's the Alter of Slobodka in his Or HaTzofen, in his essays where he talks about chesed and other qualities. So he observes that this is really the most genuine chesed. The chesed to those who are closest to us, that's the real expression of chesed, and everything else is another step removed. And that part of the expression of chesed, let's say if you help out a person who is a stranger, a person that you don't know so well, so you're benefiting that person, but that person also feels a little bit embarrassed, feels a little bit awkward that he has to receive assistance from the stranger. And when you help somebody who's very close to you, so then it's the equal chesed, while at the same time they don't have that awkwardness, they don't have that embarrassment as part of the way life is supposed to work. So says the Alter of Slobodka, that's why the closer the relative is, the more it's an act of chesed in the sense of modeling God. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's type of chesed. And that's something that we sometimes don't always perceive when we're trying to allocate both our money and our time, but that's the top of the list. So this is this idea of helping our relatives, that's very much at the top. In addition, so we know that there's also an aspect that Shulchan Aruch talks about which we don't find that much nowadays, which is the idea of merit. The Shulchan Aruch talks about the great tzaddikim deserve help first and then go down the line. So that, as Rav Kook noted, that nowadays it's very hard for us to really make calculations based on that type of an equation. And as some other posts can point out, that that's really directed towards public funds. If you have to give out a public fund, so then you can maybe start making calculations who's most worthy. But if you're giving out your own money, so then we find that the priority is really the relatives. The priority is really the people who are closest to you. And it's two different systems. So therefore, the people who are giving out their own money worry first about those who are related to them and close to them in other ways, regardless of independent merit. And people who are giving out public money, who are actually forbidden to favor their own relatives, that's the halacha says, conversely, if it's not your money, so then it's really not right for you to prefer your own relatives. So then you go from perhaps from a merit-based point of view, but that factor in and of itself is also one which is very hard to evaluate and which may have a diminished role nowadays. But going back again to your own personal money, so we find perhaps the most famous principle, which is based on a drasha from this week's parsha, that we have this idea of aniyeh yircha kodmin. that those who are from your city, those from your city, have the highest priority. And again, it seems to be an extension of this idea that those who are closest to you come first. And this is derived from, again, from these psukim, that the pasuk says, "Ki yeh b'cha evyon me'echad achecha, be'echad sh'arecha ba'artzucha." So each one of those words, from among you, from your brothers, from your land, all of this is darshan in the Sifrei, and it's mentioned in the Gemara and Gittin also, as indicating various levels of priority, tell us that aniyei ircha kodmim. So there's an extensive discussion as to why exactly this is. The Meiri writes that this is really the defining principle, this idea of aniyei ircha kodmim. This really is the guiding rule for everything. So why exactly should this be? So there are a number of suggestions how exactly we come to this conclusion. So some suggest that maybe it's a factor of the idea that we have of Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot. Rav Nosson Gestetner, who's a great posik from Bnei Brak, considers this in one of his tshuvas, that we have this rule, Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot, which essentially means, if we have a mitzvah opportunity, so we don't pass it up. We don't say, well, I could do a mitzvah today, or I could do it tomorrow, I have to choose, well, I'll do the one tomorrow. Or I could do the one that comes later, I could do the one that comes now, I'll do the one that comes later. So the Gemara says not the attitude to take. Rather, we take our first opportunity, Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot. So perhaps that's the idea, that if I have an opportunity to give tzedakah right now to somebody who's close, or I could send the money far away to somebody it's going to take a longer time to get to them, so maybe that's an issue of Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot. But that's most likely not the key factor. It's interesting, there is a debate, the Tur quotes from the Ribar Baruch. The Ribar Baruch writes that if somebody is visiting from out of town, and right now he's in your town, so they have a status of Aniyei Ircha also. And the Torah doesn't follow this view. The Torah follows the view that Aniyei Ircha mean the people who are really part of your town, not the people who are just here today. So if the idea really was Ein Ma'avirin al HaMitzvot, we don't want to pass up a nearer opportunity. So if somebody's visiting you from afar, right now they're nearer. So it seems that that's not necessarily the equation, and that maybe the equation has to do with something else. Rav Shimon Shkup has a fascinating comment. Rav Shimon Shkup was one of the great European Rosh Yeshiva and spent a year teaching here in Yeshiva University as well before he passed away. And he has a number of svarim. So one of his important svarim is called Shari Yosher. Shari Yosher is all of his very intricate halachic essays of very complicated lumdus. But he has a very poetic introduction. So in his introduction to his Shari Yosher, so he comments on the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which is source 15 on this page. But the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that Hillel would say, we all know this line, Emeina nili mili, uchishani la'atzmi ma'ani, which we normally translate as representing a balance. That on the one hand, Emeina nili mili, that if I am not for myself, so who will be? I have to look out for myself. But if I'm only for myself, then who am I? So basically I have this tension. On the one hand, I got to worry about myself. On the other hand, I have to worry about everybody else. So I try to find the balance, and perhaps that's what the Mishnah is telling us. So if Shimon Shkup understood differently, and he explained that really this is all one sentence, and that this is representing the way we relate to the world. And on the one hand, it's true, imena nili mili. But I have to worry about myself. I'm a human being. I have to make sure I survive. I have to make sure that I can function. So I have to have a priority of worrying about myself. That's a basic human necessity. It says only HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have that problem. It says that's why the pasuk says, Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani. God says, you shall be holy. But then goes on to say, ki kadosh ani. The Medrash says, I'm always going to be holier than you. God is going to be the holiest. We try to be almost as holy as God, but we can't be as holy as God. So says Rav Shimon Shkup, holiness in this context has to do with giving to others, with nobility, with being committed to others. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no need, so he can be completely holy. He is devoted to the whole world. Human beings can be very devoted. They can't be like God because they have basic human needs. So says Rav Shimon Shkup, that's what the Mishnah is recognizing. Emeina nili mili, I'm a human being. I need to take care of myself. But where do I have room to grow? The question is, what does the word ani mean? We translate the word ani as meaning I, meaning me. But we could really understand it in many different ways. Ani can mean me. It can mean me and my family. It can mean me and my block, me and my neighborhood, me and my town. It can mean me and the entire Jewish people. It can mean me and the whole world. So the question is, how many people will I bring into the umbrella of the word ani? How much how much of the world population will become a part of my definition of ani? How expansively will I understand that word? So says Rav Shimon Shkop, that's what the Mishnah is saying to us. If I'm not going to be for myself, then I can't function. I need to worry about myself. But kishani la'atzmi, if I define the word ani as meaning me personally, just me the individual, without bringing anyone else into that definition, so then ma'ani, what is really ani in the end of the day? But if I understand ani in a broader understanding, in a sense that there are other people included in it, and I go in a straight line, I go first to those who are closest, and those who are a little bit less close come after, so then that's understood as expanding the ani, and that's what we're being told here. So it makes sense from that perspective. When we talk about aniye ircha kodmim, we are saying that we are looking to expand the ani as much as possible in a straight line, and those who are closest, and we see that Rashi has perhaps a hint of this in his commentary to Bav Metzia, it's a source right before this, where it says aniye ircha, says Rashi, dahana chavu imcha tvei, that those people who are in your town are with you more. You want to go to those who are closest to you first, and that's all part of this radiation of ani out to as many people as possible. Another element, we're almost out of time, so just mention one more thought here, and then we'll try to quickly review a little bit we spoke about. But some also point out, especially when we look to the realm of chesed, that in addition to everything else, so chesed is also geared towards creating a harmonious society, creating people who get along well with each other, who are happy with each other because of how they treat each other. And to that extent, as Rav David Aryev, the author of a nice Sfarim on Hilchos Ben Adam L'Chavero, so he notes that that's also perhaps part of the idea, especially in the realm of chesed, of Ani Yercha Kodmim, that the people who you deal with most often should be beneficiaries of your chesed, because that's also part of how society is going to function at the greatest level. That we find the Gemara tells us in the context of the obligation of Ti'ino Frika, that we have an obligation, we find somebody who's struggling with a load, he has an animal, he's trying to put something on the animal, trying to take something off the animal. So the Gemara tells us we have to, the Torah tells us we have to help them out. That's a separate obligation on top of chesed. And within this concept, the Gemara tells us a fascinating idea, that if we have two people who are both struggling at the same time, and one person is a friend of ours, we like that person, and the other person we don't like so much. The Torah already in the Gemara calls it a sone, a person who for some reason we hate, so we don't have such a great relationship with that person. So says the Gemara based on the Chumash, that we should prefer that person. The person who we don't like so much, that's the person who we should help first. Because through this act of chesed, we will overcome this instinct, we'll come to combat this feeling of dislike, and that will remedy the situation. So we see from that idea, and the Chafetz Chaim writes that this is a principle in all of chesed, this is not just a concept in Tino Frika, but we find this throughout, that we find that that's part of what chesed is meant to do, is to create a better relationship between people. So therefore, maybe that's also part of the idea of Ani Yercha Kodmim, the people who we're most likely to deal with and to interact with, who are closest to us, they should be first on our list as far as benefiting from our chesed. So there's a lot more to say. I just wanted to, again, perhaps expose us a little bit to some of these basic principles to very quickly what we spoke about. We spoke about the fact that we find the ideals of stuck and chesed both referred to in this past week's parsha. Both of them draw on limited resources of time and money, and we have to try to figure out how to expose ourselves to some of the principles in halacha which inform the discretion that's necessarily a part of what we're dealing with. We mentioned the Vilna Gaon's idea of lo sikpot tzyarcha, when a fist is closed, it looks like the fingers are all the same size, but opened up in real life, it's more complicated. And we looked at some of these principles. We talked about diversifying or concentrating, how the Rambam says better to diversify, but we saw two different angles in that, whether it has a better effect on you, like the Rambam sounds, or a better effect on the world, like the Bach says, and how that also can make a difference whether you're giving out your own money or the money of other people. And we talked about how the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara both say that you shouldn't give all to one person, and we talked about on a permanent basis or a temporary basis, and we talked about how that also may factor into the equation of somebody giving out stock of others, and we talked about the obligation of de machsoro, how we're supposed to help people with what they're lacking, even beyond basic physical needs, and how that seems to clash with the idea of 20%, so we saw the idea that this is an obligation on society rather than on the individual, and also the obligation of trying to inform people of the suffering, and then we looked a little bit at the fact that we have the two prohibitions, the Torah, lo sikbos and lo sa'. Ametz, and how that's a little scarier, and we discussed how it could be that this is only when the obligation exists, we have the prohibitions, and therefore if you're not obligated because you don't have enough money, or because you don't trust the potential recipient, or because you have other priorities, or because it won't result in hardening of the heart, all of those are reasons why the prohibition may not apply. Then we talked a little bit about prioritizations, we talked about relatives being first on the list, both in terms of staka and chesed. We mentioned the Altar of Sobotka's idea about why that's the most pristine type of chesed, doesn't have the extra component of the individual feeling embarrassed because this is the natural way of the world, and other ways in which this is closest to God's chesed. And we talked about the idea of merit, whether that really factors in nowadays or not, and how maybe that's more for the general fund rather than for your own money, which goes to who's closest first. And then we talked a little bit about Aniyah Yerecha Kodmim, about this idea based on these psukim, that that's also a prioritized value. We mentioned a couple of approaches towards that, either the idea of Ein Ma'avir Al HaMitzvot, because this is our first opportunity, how that has some weaknesses to it. Maybe the idea is more like Rav Shimon Shkop explains, this is all about expanding our Ani to include whoever is closest, and also in the realm of Chesed, how this also helps society to function in a smoother fashion, the more we express chesed to those closer to us, and that's also going to factor in. Thank you so much for your time. Should have a wonderful day.
All right, thank you very much, Rabbi Feldman. The next year will start in 5 minutes at 10:35.